Hello friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is day three of our Newsworthy Clips article. We are studying a very interesting article about researchers who are working on a device to let paralyzed limbs move. So, how are they doing that? Well, we'll find out today. But before we get into our article, let me welcome back my friends, Joshua and Linda. All right, guys, day three. Are you guys ready?
Yes, we are.
We're definitely ready. And looking forward to another article.
Yes. Okay, so today's article, we're talking about helping people walk again, right? So imagine that, you know, you get into a terrible accident and suddenly you can't walk. You've lost the ability to control your legs and you may be in a wheelchair. If there were a way for you to walk again, would you be interested?
That would be amazing. I would definitely be interested.
Okay.
Yeah, and there are many people who are in this exact situation.
Exactly.
I'm sure they would very excited to have something like this. So, yeah, this would be a huge breakthrough.
Mm-hmm. So researchers have been studying and they've been experimenting and they are making progress in this area, and soon maybe these, what we call paraplegics, right, people who can't walk, maybe they will be able to walk again soon. So how is all this work? Well, let's find out in today's article. So today we are on page 20 of the Newsworthy Clips article for the month of March. Let's get started and we'll discuss.
Researchers work on device to let paralyzed limbs move. Researchers are making progress in a quest to create a device that would allow people who have been paralyzed by injury or stroke to move their limbs. The goal is to make such a device, which would be implanted in the brain and interpret brain signals, available for clinical trials in 8 to 10 years. Such devices could be a game changer, said Rajesh Rao, director of the Center for Sensory Motor Neural Engineering at the University of Washington. It would radically alter the way we might help people for stroke or spinal cord injury, he said. The National Science Foundation granted the center $16 million for its research. The center is led by the University of Washington and includes researchers from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, San Diego State University, and others. Implantable devices would work by sending signals between regions of the brain or nervous system that no longer communicate with each other because of injury or stroke. The goal is to create devices that create a new artificial pathway, allowing information to bypass damaged parts of the brain or nervous system.
So researchers are working on a device to let paralyzed limbs move. What are we referring to when we talk about devices?
So a device can really be any sort of like constructed invention or tool or engine in order to do something.
Right. Okay. So this device would allow people who have been paralyzed by injury or stroke to move their limbs. So we're not necessarily talking about people who were maybe born paralyzed, right? But that they became paralyzed because of certain circumstances or situations that happened to them.
Right.
So stroke is basically when there is bleeding in the brain, right? So maybe a blood vessel or something bursts in your brain.
Yeah, it's any time when the brain is damaged because of like a blood loss. So there could be like you say, like an aneurysm, like bursts,
right.
Or it could also be like a blood clot
blocks
an area of the brain from getting blood. And basically what it means is that that part of the brain dies off because it doesn't have blood and oxygen anymore.
That's right. So the injury might just be, like we said, you know, you get hit and there's a spinal damage and things like that. Now, what is the goal that these researchers have?
Well, their goal is to make a device, which would be implanted in the brain and interpret brain signals, to make it available for clinical trials in 8 to 10 years.
Hmm.
So there's still a ways to go mm-hmm. before this is even available for clinical trials.
Right.
But the possibility is very likely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And I mean, it would make sense why it would take time, because mm-hmm. that's not an easy task.
Exactly.
I mean, our brains, our bodies are just amazing. It's just amazing how they're built and they're designed. And for your brain to send signals to your body, it's not easily replicable.
Right, exactly. Right? Plus, you know, in order to be able to get around damaged areas, like, that involves a lot of work, because mm-hmm. damage can be all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
From, like, we were talking about the injuries to a stroke, so there's just a lot of different systems involved.
Right, yeah. So we hear from Rajesh Rao, and he's the director of the Center of Sensory Motor Neural Engineering at the University of Washington. And what does he say about these devices?
Well, that basically it would radically alter the way we might help people for stroke or spinal cord injuries.
Right.
When you radically alter something, you change it drastically.
Yep. And that's what he says. It says it's a game changer, right?
Exactly.
And we often use this phrase game changer when we're talking about something that really shifts things, right? You know, mm-hmm. we might say the iPhone or mobile devices, the smartphone, these were game changers,
mm-hmm.
right? Facebook was a game changer.
Sure.
You know?
It affected how we communicate with others.
Or maybe even how we understand the world.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So these devices could be game changers. It would change the way that people help people after a stroke or spinal cord injury. Now, the National Science Foundation granted the center $16 million for its research. And how would these implantable devices work?
Well, they'd work by sending signals between regions of the brain or nervous system that no longer communicate with each other because of the injury or stroke.
Hmm. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
That is very amazing.
Yeah. Actually, I wonder if that would work for my daughter, because my daughter, when she was born, she suffered from lack of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So actually part of her brain was damaged in that process.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if, you know, something like this might be able to help her. I mean, she's able to mm-hmm. walk, and she's learning to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if, you know, something like this might. Because I know our brains are pretty amazing.
Are pretty amazing.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like, when certain parts of the brain are damaged, you can train through therapy for other. You can kind of have other parts of the brain
take over.
Bit, right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty amazing. And so now we're thinking about implanting, which just means kind of opening up the brain and
literally putting something inside,
yes,
right?
Inserting something in there. And the goal is to create devices that would create a new artificial pathway. So not one of the natural ones that our body might have, but an artificial one, a fake one, allowing information to bypass damaged parts of the brain or nervous system.
And because the brain is so, it's amazing, but it's also very complex. It's
yeah,
very
right.
complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So doing this, there are a lot of challenges,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess we'll find out in the next reading.
Yeah, right. That's right. So speaking of which, let's finish up our article. We're going to read in the right-hand column.
To make the device work properly, researchers must develop powerful algorithms that can correctly decipher brain signals and deliver the information to the appropriate region of the body, he said. On the hardware side, researchers must create devices that can be embedded in neural tissue and not be rejected. Brain tissue tends to encapsulate embedded electrodes with scar tissue, which prevents them from functioning properly, Rao said. And researchers must understand how the brain rewires itself after an injury and how it might adapt to an artificial device. The team includes computer science and engineering professors and neuroscientists and neurosurgeons. Rao described the center's work as a joint venture between academia and industry. Rao said researchers are also exploring ways to wirelessly power implantable devices, so their batteries don't have to be replaced.
All right, so it sounds like science fiction, but it is real. So to make the devices work properly, what do researchers need to do?
Well, they have to develop powerful algorithms to correctly decipher brain signals, right? So this is creating basically algorithms. I guess another way to express them would be sort of formulas, sort of like if-then statements. So if something happens, then something else should be the result, but much more complicated than that. But to develop those programs so that they can decipher or be able to break down brain signals into codes that they can understand.
Yeah, this is definitely beyond my expertise, but I think the idea of, you know, right now when we want to move our hand, most of us don't actually have to think about, like, okay, move my hand, you know, but, like, your brain sends a signal to your hand, right? So how does that happen? You know, and this is something they have to figure out.
Right.
You know, where to put this device also, you know, how do we implant this device? And when we put it in there, then how do we have that device tell the hand to move? Or how do we have that device tell the feet to move? And how to, you know, because even growing up, you have to learn how to walk. Right, you have to learn, you have to make those brain connections. So you have to learn how to control your body. So then now you've got this artificial device in your brain that has to learn how to do these things. So there's a lot of different things to think about. And here we talk about the hardware side, right? So the actual physical device. And what is something that they're considering in this area?
Well, this challenge is trying to create a device that can be embedded in neural tissue without it being rejected.
Right. Why is that important?
Well, the brain tissue or tissue in general, it's easy for the body to reject something that is foreign, right? Mm-hmm. That's its job. Like it's part of our immune system. But the brain tissue tends to encapsulate, be something that might be inserted. Encapsulate means to enclose, right? So it might enclose embedded electrodes with scar tissue, and that would prevent it from properly functioning.
Right.
So they have to create a device that it won't be rejected, and so it won't be embedded in this scar tissue.
Yeah. So it's not a simple process. It's not just, oh, you just put this in there and it'll work.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of things to consider. And like Linda was saying, your body is designed to reject anything that is foreign. So anything that you put in your body that it recognizes as, this is not my own, it's going to try to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so how do you create something that can be put in your body without your body saying, wait a second, this is not human or this is not mine, right? So it's not as easy as just, you know, making a really tiny computer and then just putting it in someone's brain, right? So you have to figure out how to make the connections and how to prevent the scar tissue from growing and preventing it from functioning properly, and also, as we've been talking about, researchers must understand how the brain rewires itself after an injury.
Right.
Yeah. And we were talking a little bit about that with my daughter, just how, you know, right now we're putting her through therapy because certain parts of her brain, there's damage, but if you work with her at a young age, the brain pretty much can rewire itself and connect the parts of the brain that are still alive and still working to the parts that we want to work.
Mm-hmm. You'll find this sometimes also in victims of a stroke who have not just lost the ability to control some of their muscles, but have also maybe lost the ability to speak.
Right.
That with therapy and with time, that they can relearn how to use those muscles in order to reclaim a lot of their speech, right?
Right.
So that is part of the wonders of the body, that it can work on healing itself, but then to understand how that happens and to take advantage of it.
Right. So they're actually, a lot of research that is involved, right? So you gotta have to work on the hardware side. You have to figure out, okay, well, what kind of material can we use that the brain or the body will not reject, right? Then there's the question of, okay, well, how do we implant this in there? What's the best way to do this? Then there's the idea of, okay, well, how does the body rewire itself? So now we've got this thing in there, how do we get it to work, right? How do we get it to start programming things in your body, you know? So there are a lot of different elements and a lot of different facets, so no wonder it's not an easy project.
Right, and that why it will take
8 to 10 years.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Or longer.
Or longer. I feel like it's probably going to take longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So researchers must understand how the brain rewires itself after an injury and how it might adapt to an artificial device, right? And I mean, this is not the first time where people have used artificial things inside of a body, right? We think of, you know, pacemakers, right?
Right, that's a good example.
You know, you implant something in the heart, right, and help the heart to pump. So there are previous examples of artificial devices being implanted in humans, in people, and mm-hmm. helping the body to function, right? Now, they have a rather large team working on this project, right? So what kind of experts do they have?
Well, they have computer science and engineering professors, neuroscientists, and neurosurgeons all working on this team.
Mm-hmm. Right, so computer science and engineering professors, why would they be important?
Well, you need someone to handle the programming, mm-hmm. right? But then you also need someone, so an engineer, in order to be able to help design and build the device itself.
Right, yeah. So people to write the programming or the algorithms, as we said earlier, you need people to be able to kind of help to develop the device. And then we have the neuroscientists and neurosurgeons. Now, when we see the prefix neuro, we're always talking about brain and the nervous system, mm-hmm. right? So neuroscientists are scientists that study the brain and the nervous system. And neurosurgeons, what are they?
So this would be a specialty mm-hmm. of a type of doctor who mm-hmm. does surgery on the brain and the neural systems, right? So someone who may try and repair damaged nerves so mm-hmm. that you can regain a little bit of your function, as well as also to say if you were to have something happen inside your brain,
right.
A neurosurgeon would be the person who would then actually go inside in order to attempt to repair it.
Right. Okay, so breaking this down, basically we have a huge team, right? So you have people who understand how the brain works, the neuroscientists, right? And then the neuroscientists are probably communicating with the engineering professors and the computer science professors who are teaching them and helping them to figure out what they need to program and how to program it. And then you have the people who are actually going to be doing the implanting, mm-hmm. right? Because they know that their expertise, the neurosurgeons, their expertise is the brain, so they know how the brain functions and what things they need to be aware of when they're going to be putting a foreign device into the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Rao described the center's work as a joint venture between academia and industry. What is he talking about?
So academia is a description of the pursuit of knowledge within sort of the confines of universities and professors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are people who, pursue research and knowledge for the sake of research and knowledge.
Right.
So usually we would consider like academics to be like a school of study.
Mm-hmm.
So academia would be people who are, employed and make up that school.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So then industry, on the other hand, industry is usually a economic force,
mm-hmm.
right? So when we talk about someone who's in the business industry or mm-hmm. in the automotive industry, we're talking about that area of economics that have to do with like the sale and manufacture of cars
mm-hmm.
or in the pursuit of business products, right?
Right,
so industry here is sort of a general term of people who then would be involved in the industry of providing these services to people who have received these type of injuries.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that, you know, we have people who are studying, right? And so there's the intellectual area of this venture, right? So academia, we see earlier in the article where they talk about University of Washington, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, right? San Diego State University and others. So we have a lot of university researchers and professors involved. And then, as Joshua was saying, the industry is just the money-making side of it.
Right.
You know, so how do we provide this service to people? How do we make money? How do we create a business out of this device? Now, Rao said researchers are also exploring ways to do what?
To make this device wireless, mm-hmm. or to be wirelessly powered.
Right.
So they don't have to have their batteries replaced.
Can you imagine if it were wireless, just have this, like, cord sticking out of your head, and, like, as you sleep, you've got to, like, plug in your brain,
right.
You know?
Or even worse, have somebody cut you open every, like, 6 months or so in order to change your batteries? That would be terrible.
So how can it be self-powered, and how can it be wirelessly powered, which sounds kind of...
Yeah, it's another big challenge. Yeah, so they have quite a few challenges.
Right.
They do have wireless charging for, like, your phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Where you can stick your phone on top of a pad,
right.
and it will charge, but that's only for certain phones that are advanced, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I would imagine they'd have to be a little bit, you know, I wouldn't want to just stick my head on top of a pad and be like, I'm going to bombard myself with electricity now, you know?
Or you could stick it under your pillow as you sleep.
Exactly. So, in order to be able to do that, that would involve a lot of development. But you could understand why industry, or at least the business side of this, would be very interested, because so a lot of times these types of developments end up having applications that can be, you know, sold or marketed on. They don't necessarily have to do exactly with this. So if you think of the ability for small implanted devices to be self-powered, like a pacemaker, that would also be sort of a game changer as far as the development and sales of those other types of devices, as well as, you know, who knows, you could get super, I mean, it does sound science fiction. The idea of putting something in your brain that could work with your brain signals in order to affect something else, right? So the idea that maybe you could think and change the pointer on your screen or the computer, or who even knows, maybe be able to control a prosthetic hand, like those sort of things, could have a lot of applications that could then turn into sales that aren't necessarily involved with the particular, like, curing of people who can't walk or who can't move a particular muscle because of injury.
Yeah, so a lot of different applications that might stem from this type of research.
Exactly.
And it's kind of interesting to think about. Would either, like, let's say you didn't have any kind of a spinal injury. Would you be willing to implant something like this in your brain if, let's say, you, as you were bringing up Joshua, you could maybe call someone with just the thought? Or you could, you know, like, because right now when we're writing articles, right, you sit in front of a computer and you actually have to move your fingers and type. Like, what if you could just, like, think and words appeared on the screen?
I think I'd find that scary. Yeah. I think I would just rather type.
What about you, Joshua?
Well, I mean, as cool as that sounds, and I'm sure there would probably be situations in the future where, you know, I might consider that. I know that, you know, for the side effects of having something implanted in your brain, you would be a little bit wary, you know, or at least, you know, have to consider that maybe there might be some disadvantages, right? But then, like, say, for example, if you're paralyzed, that, you know, the advantage outweighs the disadvantage.
Yes,
right.
For sure.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So there are a lot of things, there's a great potential here, and, you know, a huge market, and I'm really glad that we studied this article, because it's definitely cutting edge, and I know that here in Advance we like to be cutting edge. We like to share the newest information as soon as it comes out, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see what comes of this and how the world will change in the next 8 to 10 years.
That's true.
You know, and I'm often thinking about how, you know, these smartphones come out and these new electronics come out and, you know, people of the older generation, they kind of don't really get into it, you know, and I'm just
it's hard to keep up.
Yeah. And I'm like, how could, you know, how hard is it? You know, but then lately, there's been new technology that's been coming out, and I've kind of started to feel like, oh man, like something else to learn. Like I can't be bothered, you know. And but then I think about, oh, if I can't be bothered, then I might end up being left behind, and that would not be good. So we never want any of our listeners to be left behind. So that's why we always try to pick really interesting articles, cutting edge articles, to allow you to understand what's going on in the world and what is coming up in the future. All right, so we hope you enjoyed our 3 days of newsworthy clips. I hope these articles gave you some food for thought, and we'd love to hear from you. What did you think about these articles? You can write to us at letters@studioclassroom.com, or you can check out our QR code at the top of page 18, or you can visit our m.studioclassroom.com website on your mobile devices and listen to our program again. Well, that's all the time we have for this newsworthy clips article for the month of March. We hope you enjoyed your time with us. And as always, remember to come back and join us again for the next lesson. Thanks, friends. Take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Bye.